This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That
all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm in the studio with Carey Jr. II. He is the show's producer.
Good day. Hey. I gotta find another way to greet you. I feel like good day is too old-timey.
Good day is the greeting I used to use on Detroit Today every day, and I developed that during the pandemic because I said any day that we were all there and people could listen and I could do the show was a good day because there were a lot of folks who were not going to be there over time. So I for 4 years, really.
For continuity's sake, maybe I'll keep it.
Yeah, it's not a bad phrase. I think it's a optimistic phrase.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Carey, how much do you remember about testing?
Oh, goodness.
In school.
So if we're talking about the annual state mandated tests that we took in, you know, K through 12 years, I remember hating those days. That's a strong word. I disliked them very much. I did not want to sit in the classroom for hours on end. Yeah. But I was excited that I didn't have a full day of school.
Right.
But I can't say that I was.
But the level of anxiety, I think, is the thing that most of us look back on.
I just, to be honest, I did not find them to be. I was like, what is this for? Like, I did not.
Why am I even doing this?
Care much about them, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. You know, I have kind of the same memory, but I also have a real memory of fear when I was young in the elementary school.
Fearful.
Yeah, fearful that the result of the test would mean some negative consequence.
To you.
For me, sure. And I remember telling my mom that I didn't want the teachers or the principal or whoever to see whatever score I was going to get.
Wow.
I was very worried about that.
What? Why? What do you?
I think there was a fear of failure that I would do poorly, and that would mean they would think less of me or something would happen. You know, I mean, there's this high stakes nature that I think comes with testing and the testing culture that really puts kids in a bind, an emotional bind in some ways.
I do think when it comes to college admissions exams and it's a make or break on whether I'm going to get into the school of my dreams and I've got, well, I guess one shot depending on how much you can save up to take the tests to make it happen, then I definitely feel there's some intense anxiety around it. But testing, even in a regular school setting for sure, can cause some anxiety when you note that whatever your result's going to be is going to be a part of your permanent educational and intellectual record.
Yeah. And that's part of what we want to talk about today on the show is what does testing look like? What does it mean? What do the results of these tests actually mean? And how do they compare to other ways to measure student achievement and success, things like grades? Can we come up with a better way to think through the way that we assess kids that maybe makes them less anxious but also gives us a better picture of what they are doing or what they're capable of doing?
And our guest today, Elaine Allensworth, can definitely shed a light on all of this. Allensworth is the Lewis Sebring Executive Director of the UChicago Consortium. And for 20 years, she's conducted research on educational policy and practice. Now, I'm interested to hear more on whether college admissions offices are leaning too heavily on standardized tests. What about you, Stephen? What are you interested to hear?
I'm really eager to hear how she separates the value of testing from the value of grades and how you come up with a way to use maybe a little bit of both to figure out what's working. Elaine Allensworth, it's great to have you with us on Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So I want to start with talking about the culture of testing that exists in our schools. And I kind of want to start with the K-12 playing field, where anyone who has children is used to, especially in public schools, once a year, sending them off to take a test that is supposed to tell them exactly how much their children are learning, how much they know, exactly how well their schools are doing. Let's talk about where this culture comes from. Why do we rely so heavily on these tests, these once a year snapshots, I guess, if you will, to tell us what's going on with our kids in education?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Why? Because they actually don't tell us everything that I think.
They don't do the things I just said they do, right?
Yeah, they actually don't do that. You know, they're one source of information. They definitely provide useful information, some useful information, but people have, you know, kind of put this meaning on them that goes well beyond what they can actually tell us. And, you know, this culture of testing has become so, so extreme. You know, you said, oh, students take these tests once a year. Well, you know, in many districts, students are taking, you know, 3, 4, 5 standardized tests a year. And it takes a lot of instructional time. And it's not just the time taking the test, it's all the time preparing for the test. Mm-hmm. And then the messages that are given back about the test results are often very misleading. And so while, you know, I think they're initially, you know, they're adopted, you know, for the purpose of supporting students and, you know, providing better instruction, they are so overused and overinterpreted that they often have actually adverse effects on students and instruction and on learning.
So if they aren't measuring what we would like to know or what we need to know about our children and how they're performing in school and how our schools are performing, what are they measuring? What are they actually telling us about our kids and our schools? Is it an example of garbage in, garbage out, that it's not really telling us much? Or is it telling us something that's just not very useful or accurate?
Yeah, so they definitely give information. But I would say it's one piece of information. So they're overinterpreted to as if they, you know, can tell us about, you know, how well our schools are performing or how ready our students are for the next level of education, when it's just one piece of information. I liken it to looking at how fast someone can run 100 meters and saying, let's use that information to say how prepared they are to play in a football game or, you know, a basketball game or something. You know, it's one piece of information. You would not choose your team based solely on how fast they can run 100 meters. And you wouldn't spend all your time having to, you know, having your team members run back and forth in order to prepare them for the big game. It's one piece of information. You know, from the beginning, when standardized tests were developed, you know, the test makers said, you know, they only capture a small bit of what students are learning in school. They have never been designed to capture more than really just, you know, some specific pieces of information about what students know and what they can do. But there's so much in school that is not captured on standardized tests, mm-hmm. and can't be captured on standardized tests. So for example, first of all, you know, they tend to only be given in two subjects, math and English language arts. Even in those subjects, you can't put all of the content from a given year into a test. It would be impossible. The test would be so incredibly long. So the test makers have to decide what pieces of information they're going to ask, right, given all the content they could potentially ask. Beyond that, there are some skills that are just really hard to test on a standardized test. So it's very, you know, to be able to test really complex reasoning, analysis, application, those would take very long questions. So if you start to try to ask questions that get at those kinds of skills, mm-hmm. then you could have fewer questions. So that means even less content. And then there are some things that you really can't put at all on standardized tests. You know, things like, you know, creativity and cooperation, but also, you know, ability to bring in, you know, different sources of information, mm-hmm. and synthesize information. There's just so much that students learn that you just are never going to going to have on your standardized test. So when we're looking at the results of the standardized test, we are looking at a sliver of what students know. We're looking at very specific pieces of information. And then beyond that, how students perform in the test is also affected by a lot of factors other than those specific academic skills that we intend to test. It's affected by general knowledge, mm-hmm. things like how quickly you experience cognitive fatigue in taking tests, your vocabulary, whether you're comfortable with guessing, how you perform well under stress. And then it's also affected by other things like, your mood, are you hungry? It's affected by things like stereotypes. So if you think that people think that you are not going to perform well, then you will perform less well than you actually should. So there's just lots of things that also affect test performance beyond just those academic skills. So again, they can only give you so much information. And so we put all, we kind of put all this value on these tests when they can't tell you all those things about, mm-hmm. How much a student has learned and whether they're prepared and whether our schools are preparing students well.
So why do we care about them so much? I mean, the high stakes nature of all of this has just become, outsized in schools. And it's not just in schools and school districts. It's in the political arena as well. Lots of politicians put the emphasis on test scores as their measure for how schools are doing, and they want to do all kinds of things like tie funding to it or condition advancement in school. Here in the state of Michigan, they passed a law a few years ago that said if third graders couldn't pass the reading test that we give them, we weren't going to let them go to fourth grade. So you'd have this massive holdback kind of effort. I mean, there's this constant, almost urgent association with failure, and the specter of failure that we put around this. Why are we doing that if it's telling us so little?
I think that people believe that the tests tell us more than they actually do. And because that's the information that's out there, that's what people use. And I think that people don't trust students' grades. Uh-huh. You often hear things about grade inflation or subjectivity around grading. And I would say there is not evidence. There's some subjectivity in grades, and there's variability in terms of how teachers assign grades across different classes and schools. But there's not evidence that those differences are any larger than how much error there is in a given test score as a measure of how much students have learned. And the fact is, if we look at what is most predictive of how students will do later, in later grade levels or when they go to college, students' grades provide much more information than students' test scores. They're much more accurate in terms of predicting how students will do later. I think people see test scores as this objective measure of, what students have learned. And so they feel like it's comparable, over time mm-hmm. and across different schools and districts. And it is. But again, it's comparable in terms of that sliver that they can actually tell you about in terms of what students have learned. And so because they're so narrow, there's just a lot that you're missing. And so if you think about subjectivity, well, there's a lot of subjectivity in terms of what is actually included on the tests and what they can say about student learning. And so you're missing just a lot. A lot of information about students. And beyond that, people have this idea, there's so many misperceptions about standardized tests, mm-hmm. I'd say. So I could kind of go on and on, but they have this idea that, you can just teach people the content of the test, that's being tested, and then they'll perform better on the test.
Right.
But actually, that's not really the case. I mean, definitely they will perform better if they, learn the material on the test, but there's something that's very difficult. There's something about how students perform on standardized tests that does not change very much over time, even with more, with learning. Mm-hmm. So yes, the test scores will go up, but not by very much. And I think that's because, you know, the test makers, you know, they are very concerned about having, you know, the test be able to spread student achievement out, you know, students out on a continuum.
Right.
And so they will include questions that really differentiate strongly among students. And those kinds of questions that everyone would be getting right, like, all, you know, most third graders, almost all third graders would get it right. They don't include those questions on the test because everyone would get them right. Like, it doesn't give us any more information, right?
Right.
And so they'll, you know, they'll have these questions that really spread students out. But then in order to do that, they have to, you know, incorporate other kinds of skills in those questions, right? It can't be those simple kind of straightforward questions. So it'll be multi-part questions or, you know, questions that, you know, where you have to draw in, you know, other knowledge or vocabulary or, you know, put things together, you know, use logic, things like that. And so at that point, you're kind of going beyond, you know, the specific skills that are being included in the test. And I say that and people say, do you think all students can't learn? And that's not what I'm saying at all. Because what I'm saying is meeting those thresholds doesn't mean that you won't perform well in school or in college or at work. The tests, again, they give you some information, but, you know, different students have different skills, different strengths. And that's not all, you know, performing well in standardized tests is just one thing that might help you in the future.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Elaine Allensworth of the University of Chicago Consortium. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson. Our guest is Elaine Allensworth. She's conducted research on education policy and practice for 20 years. We're talking about the use of tests to decide how students are doing in K-12. Is there a better way to assess academic progress? Let's get back to the conversation. So let's talk about grades. I know you're a strong advocate of the idea that grades tell us much more about how children are doing or students are doing in school. Why is that true? Talk about the things that grading offers us that tests can't.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they're just a much more comprehensive measure of what students, you know, have done and achieved in their classes than test scores can be. So, you know, grades, you know, they're based on all the different kinds of assignments that teachers have given to students over the course of an entire semester or a year. And so you can look at lots of different kinds of skills can be more higher level, that can, you know, incorporate, you know, long-term, you know, work and shown in lots of different ways rather than just, you know, answering discrete questions, right? So you have essays, you can have discussion, you can have, you know, large projects, things like that, as well as different kinds of tests and quizzes and assessments. And then beyond that, grades also incorporate students' engagement in the class. And so whether they do it directly, like some teachers will, you know, incorporate behavior into their grades, like, you know, are you participating? Are you coming to class every day? Are you getting all your homework done? Other teachers won't necessarily incorporate those things, but you have to do those things in order to, you know, to get good grades and be able to perform well on your assignments and your tests. So, it really captures how much students are fully engaged in learning. And ultimately, that's what matters the most for students, right? And we see that, like, the classes where students are working the hardest, those are the classes where they're learning most, as reflected in test score gains, but also in terms of their longer-term outcomes. So, if a teacher is able to really motivate students to work hard, that actually matters more for their long-term outcomes than whether the teacher can get them to show gains on their test scores.
Yeah. I want to talk about subjectivity and the role that it plays in grading and why. I mean, I would think that most people who advocate testing and who push for testing would say one of the reasons is it doesn't have the subjectivity that grading does, right? It's a standard. When you're talking about grades, a teacher could see two different students' performance that might be quite similar. They could see it very differently and grade it very differently. And then, of course, different teachers see different kids and students and their performances in different ways. Why doesn't that subjectivity, in your mind, cloud the veracity, I guess, of grading as a way of measuring?
Yeah, well, it definitely is an issue. I'm not saying that. Because certainly, you know, teachers, I mean, they choose different kind. You know, they'll give students different kinds of assignments. They'll emphasize different things. They will differ in their severity in which they grade assignments. And there's lots of evidence that all of that is true. But then if you look at the actual differences among teachers in terms of the grades that they assign, they're not night and day, first of all. You know, like I think without having rubrics or anything, you know, teachers will tend to differ by about 5 points on a 100-point scale. When I looked at differences across teachers in terms of the grades that they give, you know, I definitely see that there are differences. And I've looked at this in different ways. I've looked at what are the differences in the average grades they give, but also I've looked at it in terms of the match between the grade the teacher gave and then how the student performs the next year in the next class that they take to see are there consistent differences based on which teacher you have in terms of their judgment of that student's preparation in the subject. And so I see differences that are, you know, and they're consistent in terms of certain teachers seem to be harsher or give more, you know, lower grades or higher grades than others. The differences are, so a teacher that's at like about the 85th percentile, you know, gives grades that are about, you know, a third, you know, like 0.3 to 0.5 GPA points different than an average teacher.
Okay.
So, you know, so if you have like this really, you know, lenient teacher, say, or a really harsh teacher, you know, you might get a grade that's like half of a GPA point difference than another teacher would give. So that's definitely a meaningful difference. It's not necessarily, again, as I was saying, any more different than the measurement error on the test. You know, anytime you measure anything, there's going to be error.
There's some
and it's going to be different if you like, you know, take another measurement some other time. So that's true with standardized tests. And that's true with,
you know,
if you have a different
too.
Teacher, right? Yeah. So it's not any worse than with tests. It's just there's always error. But even beyond that, that's why GPAs, I think, are very strong, is that as predictors of how students will do later. Because once you kind of average a bunch of great, you know, grades together that students have received from different teachers, those differences tend to even out.
Yeah.
So you might have had, you know, a more lenient teacher in one course, but a harsher teacher in another
course.
Yeah. And so those really do even out. And I actually think it's probably good for students to have, you know, different, you know, teachers at some that are more lenient, some that are more harsh, you know, some they have different expectations because it teaches them, you know, it kind of teaches them, you know, different skills and how to handle different kinds of expectations. And it also gives them a better idea of, you know, where are they strong and where are they weak? You know, if you always had everyone doing things exactly the same way and it was always pitched, you know, to the same level, you'd have some very high achieving students who say we're always getting A's. You know, how would they ever know, like, you know, what they're, you know, where they need to work harder. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good for students to actually experience different kinds of expectations. Or like if you are always struggling, you could never do well. And then, you know, but then with certain kinds of activities or, you know, assignments, you actually end up doing well. You know, you get a sense of, oh, this I can do. You know, it'd be so frustrating if you never, if you're always getting D's or, you know, on your assignments or whatever, right? But you have some easier assignments and it's like, oh, hey, I can do this. It gives you a better sense of what you can do and, you know, what you need to work at, and keeps you challenged.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this idea of grade inflation, and I want to start with a reference. I went to school in the late 70s and the 1980s, and the approach to grading and the approach to almost everything back then was kind of brutalist, right? I mean, it was kind of every person for themselves. You did what you were supposed to do. You got the score you were supposed to get, and that was about the end of it. I think it works differently now, and I think that change is probably an improvement for the acculturation and maturation of the students themselves, right? This idea that the space to learn and the space to fail without, you know, harsh consequence, I think is much better than what kids in my generation faced. At the same time, I wonder, I mean, given the preponderance of things like A pluses and extra credit and all of these things that have changed the way we think about grading, how much of that should we take into account when we talk about grading as a better way to measure student outcomes? What are we measuring if it's not straight performance?
Well, first of all, it's never been straight performance. It's always
there was always some thumb on the scale.
No. I mean, first of all, I am not a proponent of grade inflation at whatsoever. Okay. I mean, I don't think you want to give out grades that give students credit when they haven't done the work. I think that actually undermines students' achievement in the long term. We know that students actually thrive the most when they are challenged. Mm-hmm. They want to be held to high expectations. And, you know, if you don't hold students to high expectations, you know, you will be undermining them in the long run. Uh-huh. And they will do worse, in later on in the future in their next classes down the line. So that should not be happening. So I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. I do know there are different, but that should not, definitely you should not be giving out grades. The key though, but I do feel like we should really be working to support students so that they earn high grades.
Okay.
And that's ultimately what's going to matter the most. And that there are a lot of, we'll talk about here in Chicago, we want all students to be getting B's or better, because we have a lot of research that says it's really the students that are earning, a 3.0 GPA or better in high school that have, at least a 50% chance of getting a four-year college degree.
Right.
But that doesn't mean like giving students, B's. No. It also doesn't mean, just saying, oh, don't worry about it. You don't have to do the assignment, whatever. We'll just count it, whatever. It means like making sure they actually can engage at those high levels so they can earn those B's or better. Because if you just excuse them, they're not actually developing the skills that they're going to need later on. And especially when they get to college, when it really is going to be, all on them to be able to get their coursework done. So
I guess what I'm, when I, and maybe I'm using the wrong word. Okay. But when I think about inflation, grade inflation, I think about the proliferation of higher grades overall for students. Parts of the grading structure that just look different. Like when I was in high school, if you did your work perfectly and didn't make any mistakes, you got 100%, and that was a 4.0. And there was nothing more that you could earn than that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I have two kids who just graduated high school in the last few years. there are kids who graduate with 4.2s and 4.4s, and there are all of these mechanisms now to recognize kids' performance in a different way, in a more generous way, I think, is one way to describe it. But maybe it's in a fuller way than what I would have experienced in school. And I guess that's the change I'm trying to get at, is not a false reward for something you haven't earned, but the different approach to even determining what achievement looks like, and trying to, I guess, adjust the system of marking children so that it does do that.
Some school districts will give students extra points for, taking honors classes and AP classes. Is that what you're referring to?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we had honors and AP classes when I was a kid. But mm-hmm. but you didn't get different grades for doing that. You didn't get more credit.
Yeah, a lot of places do that. And actually, you know, we've done research and other people have done research to show, first of all, the points that they give, the extra points, are way more than they should be. weighted GPAs are actually much less predictive of how students will do in the future than the unweighted GPAs.
Okay.
Just on actually students' performance. So the adding those extra points actually dilutes the meaning of the GPAs. It turns it from something that actually has meaning to something that doesn't have
meaning. So you don't necessarily support that. Yeah.
I definitely do not support it. Because it's a whole different thing. And it's like, and different places give different extra points for different things.
Right.
So it makes it not comparable. And oftentimes those extra points are not really equivalent to the amount of extra work that you have to do.
Right.
It's actually it tends to overinflate grades when you add those extra points for coursework. And if you want to know, well, did students do these extra things, or did they take these more advanced classes? You can look at that. You know, that can be something on students' transcripts to look at, to point out. But it's when you combine it into students' grade point averages, it actually, makes the grade point average not comparable
right.
and not as predictive.
Yeah. I mean, in colleges, colleges put all that aside. I mean, they zero
they
it
do.
All out.
They do, because it's not good information, actually.
Right.
And you can just look at the transcripts, and if you want to know that information. I will say, you hear a lot about grade inflation. People talk about grade inflation, they're sure that it exists. It's so funny, because people say, it's grade inflation. Look at how much grades have increased. And usually, they'll be like, grades have increased, but test scores, and we know it's grade inflation because test scores haven't gone up.
Right.
Well, first of all, grades and test scores do not measure exactly the same thing. Grades actually are a better measure. How do we know that test scores are just not, sensitive enough to measure the changes in students' achievement? It's not a good indicator. And actually, there is a study that was done a number of years ago. Now I can't remember the name of the people. I thought they did a really nice job of saying, what we actually need to know is, has that predictivity of, are grades less predictive? Because if they're being inflated, then we should see that they're just not as good as predicting how students will do in college, in the future. And what we see, what they showed, is actually they're at least as predictive as they ever were. Grades are fine. The question then becomes, well, why are the test scores not going up? Again, grades are the better measure. So just because the grades are going up but the test scores aren't, doesn't mean that grades are inflated.
Right.
You have to look at whether the meaning in terms of how well they predict how students do in the future has changed. But I want to say two more things with that.
Sure.
I mean, another thing is, people will talk about, grades are so inflated. Look at, I can't remember, was it Yale or some Ivy League school, Yale or Princeton, they were saying, look, the average grade is like a 3.2,
right.
How could that be? Okay, look at who Princeton and Yale accept into their classes. They don't accept anyone that has a high school GPA, like the average high school GPA at those colleges is like a 3.8, 3.9.
It's almost perfect.
They don't accept it. So, and then they only accept students with the highest test scores, the highest GPAs. In fact, I think I looked at a chart and I saw like, if you have like a 3.9 and a, the highest test scores, then your probability of getting accepted is like 25%. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's so hard to get into these. And so my question is, oh my God, if students were not ending up with all A's and B's at Princeton and Yale, I would want to know what is wrong with their climate and instruction that you've turned these incredibly high achieving students into mediocre ones, So I feel like that argument is just so ridiculous. And, and then of course, there's also the question of, people say, oh, but more students are getting A's and B's and things, but also look at what students are taking these days. I mean, the amount that look at the number of AP classes students take now compared to when, I know you were in school. When I was, could you let me know? when we were in school, students maybe would take one AP class in high school, at least in the school I went to. It was, they're taking all this, all these really rigorous classes. Why have test scores not gone up then? It's ridiculous. Students are taking, doing so much more work in high school. What's up with the test scores? Tell me. I think we need to flip these questions around.
We need to step away for another break here on Created Equal, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Elaine Allensworth of the University of Chicago Consortium. This is WDET in Detroit. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm talking with Elaine Allensworth of the University of Chicago Consortium about high-stakes testing, how much we rely on it, and whether there's a better way to assess how students are doing. Okay, I want to spend some time talking about college testing, because that's, of course, a big part of the high stakes nature of all of this, and more it seems to be, of course, weighted toward these test scores. I know some colleges have experimented at least with setting them aside. Now they're going back to them. They don't seem to know what to do with them, but let's start by talking about how much institutions are still relying on the SAT and the ACT and other kinds of standardized exams to make decisions, and whether that's also a worse way to measure performance than grades.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's been a movement to go test optional, and there have been studies that show that students who don't submit scores, do as well as students who do submit scores in colleges. They're certainly not tailing out. And we also know that when colleges go test optional, they get a wider range of applicants. So a lot of students from groups that are underrepresented in college, a lot of times won't apply. Oh, if they feel like they're going to be judged on their standardized
on their scores.
Yeah. And so by, making them optional, then, it really does open up more diversity in colleges. It makes it more likely that more low-income students will apply to more selective colleges. In terms of the quality of the information, I know one concern that's been raised is, well, if students don't submit their test scores, maybe they would have gotten when they, but they didn't because they didn't submit their test scores. And, that I think that is a legitimate concern. I think colleges should be really explicit, we will accept scores, in this range or something. The place where I feel like it becomes you know, important is for students who are coming, you know, who are applying to schools, and they're coming from high schools that haven't traditionally sent a lot of students to the selective school, where the college may be unsure about whether their grade point average, you know, does it really, you know, represent strong academic preparation because they're not familiar with the college or maybe the high school, you know, overall has low achievement. And so they're worried about that. So I think in those circumstances, you know, it makes sense for students to submit their scores, you know, and show, look, you know, they have strong, you know, it's just another source of information for achievement. And it's, you know, it's less subjective than things like, you know, teacher recommendations and, you know, participation in extracurriculars. Those things actually are very highly associated with, you know, with economic resources. You know, families with more resources can get writing essays and getting recommendations and, you know, participating in extracurriculars. So, whereas for students to, you know, show, look, you know, that they have high levels of achievement, even if the test scores aren't going to be the highest test scores of the college. But again, I think you have to be explicit to students about that. You know, I do think there's a perception that test scores are more important or equally important to grades. And, you know, again, when we look at what actually matters for how students do, you know, the grades, you know, consistently outperform test scores. And so I see test scores, again, as like that additional piece of information. You know, if you're not sure about a particular student because of, you know, what high school they came from, that you're not familiar with it. Or, you know, for very specific programs, you know, that, you know, are going to be super, super rigorous. You know, they're at the very kind of high end for those really difficult programs, and you want to know who is going to need more support. One thing we do see is that, you know, it's relative. So if students are going into like a really difficult program and their scores, you know, their test scores are lower than other students in the program, they probably will need more support. And again, I wouldn't use it to necessarily to choose who gets in, but to figure out, well, who's going to need, you know, potentially extra support when they're there.
Right. I also, of course, want to talk about the diversity implications of test scores and how it interacts with the debate that we continue to have about affirmative action and other measures to try to diversify student bodies, especially at elite institutions. You know, in the crudest terms, a lot of people say, look, this test is measuring one thing. It's measuring income. It's measuring exposure that comes from income. And that correlates in our society with race in some very obvious and damaging ways. And so as long as you're using the tests, you're making it harder to, you know, to diversify these campuses. Your argument is that grades are a better way to tell what someone has done or what they're like or what they're capable of. So why shouldn't we get rid of the tests altogether? Why shouldn't we say, look, the SAT and the ACT are measuring something that harms one of our hoped for outcomes, and so it's not helping us. Let's do something else. Is there I guess a counter argument you would make to that one?
Lean in that direction, honestly. I think that there are, again, I mentioned there are some uses for the standardized tests that can be helpful, even for promoting diversity in college admissions, and for promoting, you know, helping support students to complete their degrees. But I think you could also get those in other places. So for example, you know, I was saying, you know, if you're, you know, concerned about, you know, whether students will be, you know, whether they're coming from a high school that really prepared them well enough for college, you know, you could look, you know, not just at students' own GPAs, or if you're worried about different, you know, different, you know, expectations at different schools. You can look at students' own GPAs, but you can also look at what is their GPA relative to like other students in their school or to other students. You know, we can do look at what we call contextual GPAs and contextual test scores. So are these students who really have, you know, stood out in their school in some way? You can also use, you know, if you're unsure for whatever reason, you know, you can, you know, design support systems to really make sure that students have whatever supports they're going to need when they get to college. But again, you know, I think you would make more mistakes if you based your decisions more strongly on test scores than if you base them more strongly on grades, to be completely honest. Because again, the test scores are just not as predictive as the students' grades. Again, you know, you can also, you know, I'm thinking, you know, another reason you might want to use test scores is to figure out who will need more support in, say, really difficult kinds of programs.
Right.
But, you know, you can also just have support systems set up so as students take those courses, you figure out who needs, you know, who has need for support as they take the classes, which actually would probably be more effective because students are going to struggle in a course for lots of different reasons. And some of that may be, you know, because they're coming in with fewer skills, you know, that might be picked up on the test, but there could be lots of other reasons they might struggle that wouldn't be picked up on the test. So even in that situation, I'm not sure that it, you know, it helps that much.
Yeah. So my last question for you is whether somebody who's been really looking closely at this for a really long time, what is your assessment of the way that we're doing all this, both at the K-12 and at the higher ed level? Are we moving in the right direction to be able to not just better assess what students are doing and capable of, but also to make access, especially to higher ed, fairer and more diverse? And I guess if there was one thing you could do to make all that look better, what would it be? Is there a universal standard you could imagine, for instance, that would produce a more effective and fairer system for everyone to be judged by?
So I feel like we were making movements to kind of address or to kind of recognize at least some of the limitations of tests and, you know, moving in a, you know, at least, you know, what more colleges were becoming test optional and more people were voicing concerns about over-testing in the elementary and secondary grades. And then with the pandemic, of course, we stopped all testing and it seemed like maybe we'd be going, you know, we'd make some even bigger changes. But it feels like we're going back now to the way things used to be. And I do feel like there's a movement to really try to put standardized tests in place, or to really, so I feel like there's a movement out there that's really trying to encourage people to use standardized tests again. So maybe it's a counter movement to the movement that had started before. And, you know, I do think there are a lot of ways that, that standardized tests are used in harmful ways, especially, in the grade school years. So, you know, it's not like there's an easy fix. So you said, oh, there's one thing. There's not one thing. I actually feel like there are a lot of things that we need to do. And, you know, there are uses of standardized tests that can be helpful to students and helpful to policymakers. They're just overused and overinterpreted in so many ways and in ways that are really directly harmful to students. And I didn't get into all the different ways that they're used, you know, that I think are harmful to the purposes of educational equity. You know, if we could get away from those uses that go beyond what the test scores can actually tell you, that, you know, that label students and schools as not proficient or not performing well, even when they're, you know, they actually are performing well. You know, that would be the number one thing for me.
Yeah. Okay, Elaine Allensworth, it was really wonderful to have you here with us on Created Equal to talk about all of these issues. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure.
That'll do it for us on Created Equal. Be sure to listen to our recent episodes at WDET.org, and we would love if you would subscribe to our podcast, where you can leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Our audio editing is done by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.